Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Good morning to you and welcome to Africa Link with me, Crispin Mwakideo, in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, Zambians go to the polls to elect a new president. This voter shares the kind of leader he wants to see.
I think I'd love to see another Sata probably being put in office again. You know, a person like that, the eager, the sincerity of a person.
Questions are being asked following violent protests in Niger, which killed at least 10 people.
The fact that such a large number of churches were targeted in a city where there is a Christian minority, but their presence is not high profile, must raise questions about whether there was some organization behind some of the rioting.
And we shall go to Equatorial Guinea to find out how Ghana fared in its opening match against Senegal. Stay tuned.
Top story.
It's decision time for Zambians as they go to the polls to elect a new president in a widely contested election. The presidential by-election comes almost 3 months after the death of President Michael Sata in a London hospital. 11 candidates are vying for the country's top job, with more than 5 million voters expected to cast their votes. Kathy Sikombe reports.
It's a busy day as usual on Zambia's greatest road, one of the busiest roads in the capital Lusaka, as residents go about their daily routines. In a few hours, the voters will be casting their ballots to elect a new president. Some of the main issues that are critical to Zambians in this election are the demand for a people-driven constitution, improved living conditions, lower taxes, and more jobs for the youths, who constitute about 68% of the country's 14 million population. The top contenders in this election are Edgar Lungu from the ruling Patriotic Front and opposition United Party for National Development leader Hakainde Hichilema. Although Zambia is endowed with a lot of natural resources, more than 60% of its people live in abject poverty. I asked some Lusaka residents about their expectations in today's elections.
I think I would love to see another Sata probably being put in office again. You know, a person like that, the eager, you know, the sincerity of a person, you know. It wasn't a person that would actually hide certain things. You know, somebody who would actually speak it up. So a leader like that, I think would actually get me. So that's the person that we would actually want to have once again.
Well, the economy, it's just okay. We are free here in Zambia. We can do business at any time, at any point. The elections, they seem to be 50-50. Edgar Lungu has a lot of supporters. Even HH also had
the... HH?
Hakainde. Hakainde Hichilema has also a lot of supporters. So I don't know who's going to be the president.
For this period of transition, I think he did well, because I don't see any... Though there are some, you know, some stuff that are happening, like some cadres from this party and then from that other party fighting each other. But I think it's peaceful. I think he did well. And then for the election expectation, I'm just like telling all Zambians out there to choose wisely, and then to see how these people that have acted, those that are in power, and then to see the changes they want to make. If they want the same party to keep on like governing us, they should go ahead. And if they want change, it's all about their voice. That's what matters.
Boniface Chembe, a political analyst and lecturer at the University of Zambia, had no kind words for the media fraternity and those behind the violence witnessed prior to the voting day.
We continue to have a
political candidates conduct their campaigns in by and large a peaceful manner that continues to attract the attention of voters. Seemingly the perception that there is a biased media coverage, especially from our national broadcaster. Another problem or challenge that has been faced thus far is that related to political violence. We have seen that political violence has continued to be a scourge that is a serious concern to many people.
The vote is being carried out at a time when the rainy season is at its peak, meaning that this may delay the release of results by more than 48 hours after the polls.
DW correspondent Kathy Sikombe in Lusaka. Zambia's struggling copper industry poses a big headache for the country's next leader. The mining sector, which Zambia's economy is heavily dependent, risks low production and job cuts, according to mining companies, due to falling prices, corruption allegations and a hike in taxes. Isaac Mugabe has been finding out more on this issue as he spoke to Geoffrey Chongo, an economist and head of the program at Jesuit Center for Theological Reflections.
Well, the chances depend on who wins the elections. We have seen the current government has introduced a new mining tax system, which is mineral royalty-based. You know, previously we had a combination of mineral royalty-based and profit-based. But you know, because mining companies are capable of hiding profits, we're not getting much from the profit base. So there was pressure, you know, on government to collect more tax revenue. So they introduced a tax system that is completely mineral royalty based or sales based, and it has been introduced. But really, there has been pressure from mining companies. They were threatened, you know, closing mining companies. And their opposition, most of them are pledging concession to mining companies' demands. So really my fear is that if the opposition come in, they might relax the mining tax revenue and we may not get sufficient tax revenues.
Zambia is a country rich in copper but still has high poverty rates. What has not been done or where have the former leaders gone wrong?
Well, partly it's because of the mining tax regime. The last 10, 15 years, let me say since privatization, we surrendered we gave too many concessions to mining companies. The profit base was reduced to around 20%. And since mining companies were not declaring profit, so we hardly got anything. So that's where we have gotten it wrong. We have given too many concessions. In fact, it's because of pressure of civil society organizations and the Zambian people that we are currently getting something, because the royalty has at least increased. And then secondly, you know, we're supposed to benefit from the mining through job creation, but we're not getting the jobs that we expect. Mining companies have been allowed to bring employees even for jobs where we, for positions where we have Zambians who can, you know, who can perform. You find some mining companies getting foreigners. So really the mining company has not been able to create the jobs that would bring, you know, improve the standard of living. And for any information, mining companies are highly mechanized. So the level of job creation is limited, but also they've subcontracted, you know, most jobs they've subcontracted them out. Very bad working conditions, poor remuneration to workers. So all that really has contributed to the current situation where we are thought to benefit from the mining companies.
And what should be the new president's priorities in revamping the mine sector, like cutting down on the concessions given to mining companies?
The new president must be strong with the mining companies. The negotiation team must be strong.
Zambian economist Geoffrey Chongo.
News, analysis, and feature reports. All that here on Africa Link.
The Charlie Hebdo effect. Niger declared 3 days of mourning from Monday after violent protests over Charlie Hebdo's Prophet Muhammad cartoon. At least 10 people were killed in the fracas and dozens of churches were torched. But Niger has been previously known as a country which tolerated other religions. So why this sudden violent outburst? Isaac Mugabe put that question to Paul Melly, Associate Fellow at the Africa Programme of Chatham House in the UK.
Well, I think one has to be surprised by the effectiveness of the protest. The fact that such a large number of churches were targeted in a city where there is a Christian minority, but their presence is not high profile, must raise questions about whether there was some organization behind some of the rioting. Many of the rioters will have had no idea where all of the churches were. So we must wonder whether some people had been planning it for a few days, perhaps. Also, the fact that the riot took place a week after the presence of President Issoufou, the president of Niger, at the Solidarity demonstration in Paris, again, must raise some questions about whether there was a bit of organization behind this. I think the long-term question about Issoufou's presence in Paris, it's not such a surprise that he was there. Niger has for several years been a very strong ally of those countries who are fighting jihadism in the Sahara Desert. There are Nigerian troops in the UN force in Mali. Niger soldiers have cooperated very closely with the French in the battle against jihadism. So I think the fact that he then went to the demonstration in Paris to stand out in protest at the terrorist attacks of 10 days ago was not particularly a surprise.
What kind of message were the protesters then trying to send by carrying out such attacks, especially on churches?
There have been some long-term trends in Niger in favor of a more conservative social Muslim outlook. Basically, the country has now been democratic for just over two decades. And during that time, the civilian governments have pursued essentially a secular, not anti-religious agenda, but just an agenda that is secular and is focused on mainstream administrative and social issues. And there has been, over this time, an increase in growing interest and support, if you like, in Islamic ideas as a means of governing one's social life. Certainly, religious voices, religious thinking, have gained in influence across Nigerian society. That's probably had a big influence on social issues, questions of marriage and family codes and things like that. Niger is, of course, also next door to northern regions of Nigeria, states of Nigeria, where some of the state governors have, over recent years, introduced Sharia law, and where, again, there's been a move in a more conservative social direction. The country, of course, borders the regions of Nigeria that are affected by Boko Haram jihadist violence. All of these different influences may have played a bit into the shaping of the atmosphere, but broadly, the scale of the protests in Niger is still surprising. We haven't seen this kind of targeting of Christians in Niger before.
Associate Fellow at the Africa Programme of Chatham House, Paul Melly in the UK. You're listening to DW Africa Link from Bonn, Germany.
Africa on the Move.
Now, Nigeria is Africa's biggest oil producer. Yet more than 100 million of its 170 million citizens live without basic electricity. The Niger Delta is the source of the country's oil wealth, but even here, most people struggle with access to electricity. However, that might soon change as wind, solar power and other renewable energies are becoming increasingly popular. Damon van der Linde reports.
The waterfront slums of Port Harcourt faced complete destruction. The government declared the largely self-built communities illegal. 500,000 people live along the creeks that fringe the city. In 2009, the first bulldozers came and tore down tens of thousands of homes. Some in the community, like Babakaye, Samson, Tubenemi, stood in the way.
They said they wanted to do some developmental project, that the waterfront is a slum, that the buildings are not well planned. They're rather coming to us to plan with us to develop the place. They wanted to do it their own way, which is not right.
Michael Oedemo first came to document the evictions for Amnesty International. The experience convinced him the community needed a voice, and it needed to be independent. So he started building a solar-powered radio station called Chikoko Radio.
As we're in an informal, largely self-built community that has no municipal provision at all, it's really important that the facility can service itself, can be off-grid. And so we have sun, we have wind, and we want to harness that.
So far, they've built a training space, the media shed. The final design was voted on by the community to be a landmark. Part of the structure will float on the water, moving up and down with the tide. The community will do most of the building and take care of the solar power.
All the systems will be operated and maintained by people that live here. So already during the installation period, we ran a series of workshops, and it was actually installed by residents and members of the Chikoko team.
Renewable energy is starting small in the Niger Delta. Inemo Samiyama is Nigeria's country director for an organization called the Stakeholder Democracy Network.
So energy issues are critical, especially because the Niger Delta lacks energy. Just a paradox. When you look at the Delta from an aeroplane in the night, you see gas flares all over the place. And surrounding the gas flares, total darkness.
One of their projects is to introduce solar energy one light at a time. On the outskirts of Port Harcourt, Adebayo Amos runs a drugstore, and he needs light to charge his phone and run the business.
The challenges that we are facing here much is light. In a month, they may bring the light twice.
Stakeholder Democracy Network introduced a project to supply communities with discounted solar lanterns. Amos bought one for his store and says his customers showed so much interest in the solar lights that he started selling them himself.
Almost every day, people used to ask about the light from me. I've been using this one for 9 months, and it's very okay. It lasts for this one I own lasts for 10 hours. I love it.
He quickly sold out of the lamps, and he hasn't been able to get any more since the project ended. But given the opportunity, he's sure it would catch on.
Damon van der Linde reporting. To football now, where Ghana kicked off their Africa Cup of Nations campaign on a sour note with a 2-1 loss to Senegal. The Black Stars were without captain Asamoah Gyan, who is recovering from malaria, and started on the bench. Ghana is grouped alongside Senegal, Algeria and South Africa in what soccer analysts have called the group of death. DW correspondent Isaac Kalechi has been telling me of the fans' disappointment.
Well, Accra is quiet. You can only hear movement of vehicles, cars moving around, which shows that many Ghanaians were disappointed in the performance of the Black Stars. They were actually hoping that they can be able to win this match so that they could begin to win the hearts of many Ghanaians who were disappointed in them because of the performance they put up in Brazil last year. But many Ghanaians are very, very sad. And you can see it around and you can hear the noise around that no one really is cheering the Stars.
Captain Asamoah Gyan did not start due to malaria sickness. Can the loss be attributed to his absence?
Well, some analysts are trying to attribute that to the loss because Gyan is one of the Stars' main striker. And so they thought that if he was in the team, he would have been able to make some impact. However, some believe that the team just did not play the right tactics and that they didn't get at the right rhythm. Their midfield was down, and that is why they couldn't match up or do well in this tournament or this particular match. And so many will blame the Gyan factor, but also they think it was a teamwork, and so you cannot just blame it on one player.
And do you see the team recovering from this loss and proceeding from the group stages, or is there no hope now?
Well, every Ghanaian will be hopeful that the Stars can win their last two matches against South Africa and also against the other team in the group, which they will hope that they will be able to qualify through to the next stage. Of course, you need to beat Algeria and beat South Africa, which many Ghanaians believe that will be very, very difficult. But some Ghanaians are hopeful. For me, the team, of course, can win the two matches if they indeed put up a better performance than today.
And apart from your own country, which other team do you think stands a good chance of winning the 2015 Africa Cup of Nations?
Well, so far, we have just seen all the teams now beginning to play their first matches. It will be difficult to see at this moment. Burkina Faso lost their match on Saturday. And so, yes, Gabon beat them. Well, we've not had so many wins yet. So it will be difficult, but I'm sure many will tip Algeria, Ivory Coast, and maybe Senegal to do well in this competition.
I was talking to DW correspondent Isaac Kalechi in Accra.
Making a difference.
When the United Nations declared Mali Ebola-free on Sunday, the three Ebola-hardest-hit nations of Guinea, Liberia and Sierra Leone must have received the news as an encouragement. Even though the virus continues to ravage these countries, stories of Ebola survivors like this one of a Liberian lady named Comfort not only inspire but also challenge people to do more to stop the virus. Laura Salma Reifescheid reports.
Comfort sits on a wooden bench outside her house that lies just a little off the main road of her hometown, Banga, in northern Liberia. In black paint, "Welcome, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year" is written on the white wall of the house. Next to Comfort sits her tall, slender husband, Dennis. It is late in the afternoon and the couple are feeding their chickens that are running around the courtyard. The small woman with elegant features smiles cheerfully.
I appreciate and thank God ever so much every day for having my life again to be a newborn baby again.
The 53-year-old is a survivor. She has won the fight against Ebola. Since the beginning of the outbreak, more than 8,000 people have contracted the deadly virus in Liberia. The death rate is around 70%. Comfort, dressed in a black top and colorful skirt, will always remember the day she got infected with Ebola. It was the 14th of September. Back then, she was working as a nurse at the local hospital. The staff had been on leave for some time, as in the summer, nurses and doctors had contracted Ebola from patients and consequently died. It was supposed to be Comfort's first day back at work. As always, she took the bus to the hospital. A man moved from the aisle seat to the window to make space for her, and so she sat on this last available seat. Only later, she found out that the man was already very sick.
That seat that was infected and occupied, and she had been having diarrhea the whole night, according to him when they carried him in the ER. Before they could bring even his result, he was dead.
A few days later, the first symptoms set in. Her joints, neck and head started to ache, followed by diarrhea and fever.
Then I started crying, because I had so many friends that have gone for the treatment in Mandura and they all died. So I started crying.
Comfort's husband, her six children and grandchildren were quarantined in their house for 21 days to monitor if any of them had been infected. Some days later, Comfort's blood results come back negative. She was handed a certificate, a proof that she's no longer infectious. Recovered from the disease, Comfort rides the bus to the Ebola treatment unit every day in the hope that she can help other victims recover, just like she did.
I decided to help the Ebola patient at the center because people really helped me. So I told them if I leave, I will come back to serve the center for some time before I go back to my working area.
Today, Comfort is working the night shift at the ETU. Unlike other people entering the red zone, Comfort does not have to don a full protective suit, three pairs of gloves and safety goggles. As a survivor, she's immune to the virus. This makes her indispensable in the fight against Ebola. Comfort is also the bearer of hope. Because she survived, others hope that they will be lucky enough to escape the disease too.
That report was compiled by Laura Salma Reifescheid.
Listen to Africa Link whenever you want. Sign up for our podcast at dw.de/Africa Link Podcast.
And as always, before we leave you, here's a reminder of our main stories. Zambians are going to the polls to elect a new president after the death of Michael Sata. Niger has declared 3 days of national mourning following violent protests that killed at least 10 people. And we've also been hearing about efforts to use renewable energy in Nigeria. Well, that's all we had for you in this edition of Africa Link. Do send us your comments and suggestions on the program, either by a text message to country code 49160957595510 or an email to feedback.africa@dw.de, a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110 Bonn, Germany. From me, Crispin Mwakideu, have a pleasant day.